Es kann so sein, dass ich mache es schon, wenn wir sagen, dass wir noch es darf sein. Ich mache kurz die Views von Rav Yossi ben Yasnion und Rav Yehuda HaNachtoim in der Breis, which explains Ben Beseir's leniency as being limited to before the Kemetz was made Kaddosh and a Kli Sharis. Rav Nachman asked, what does the Tanoim hold? If they hold that the Kemetz done by a Pasul is an Avoida that can make the carbon Pasul, then even if it was never put into a Kli Sharis, it should not be allowed to be returned to the other flower and done again. If they hold it as not an avoida, then why does it become possible when it's put into a klisharis? And for the Gemara of Nachman said, in truth, it's an avoida, but it doesn't become a completed avoida until it's put into a klisharis. In fact, if so, then even if it's not put into a klisharis after the kamitza, but is instead put back into the original klisharis with the other flour, that should also make a kadosh because it's also a klisharis, and therefore it should become possible. And for the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan said, we see from here that a Kli Sharis only makes something Kaddosh when the item is put there with the intent that it should become Kaddosh, and when he returns the Kaimitz, he does not have this intent. For acting more, this suggests that with intent, the Kli Sharis will even make a puzzle item Kaddosh. However, we find that Rabbi Yochanan said that a Kli Sharis will not make a puzzle item Kaddosh. And for the Gemara, he holds that it won't make it Kaddosh to the extent that it can be offered, but he does hold that it makes it Kaddosh to the extent that it can make it puzzle. Rav Amram said the reason it does not become Kaddosh when it's put back into the original Kli is because the case is where the flour was put back onto a pile of flour so that it sits above the rim of the Keli. Since it never had gone into the Keli, it does not become Kaddosh. If it's above the rim, how did he initially take the Kaimitz? The Kaimitz must be taken from the flour that's within the Keli. Evidently, rather, a pile of flour did not reach above the rim. So when he took the Kaimitz, he took it from within the Keli. So when he took the Kaimitz, he created a void in the pile. And when he returns the flour, he returns it into that void, which is within the Keli, and therefore it should make a Kaddosh. Evidently, he returns the Kaimitz on top of the flour on the side of the Keli, and the Kaimitz therefore sits above the rim of the Keli. He then shakes the Keli to allow the Kaimitz flour to fall back into the void in the middle from where he took the Kaimitz. However, when the Kaimitz falls back into the Keli from that movement that he's shaking, it's not considered to be from a person placing it there, and therefore it does not become Kaddosh. Rabbi Yirmi asked Rabbi Zera, why couldn't we answer that the case is that he returned the Kaimitz to the Keli while it was sitting on the ground? And he could say that the Keli on the floor only makes something Kaddosh when it's being held. Should we say that this proves that one may even do a Kemitza from a Keli that's on the ground? There's no requirement that the Keli has to be held in order for it to make something Kaddosh? Rabbi Zera said, you have touched upon the question of Nachman asked Avimi. When they were discussing the proper method for doing kmitza, and Avimi told him that the keli can't be sitting on the floor, but rather has to be held by a kohen when the kmitza is being taken, and when the kmitza is then put back into the other keli. Rav Nachman asked, the Mishnah regarding pigel discusses all the necessary avoidance associated with the mincha and makes no mention of lifting the keli off the ground. This would seem to mean that there's no such requirement. Avimi said the Mishnah only listed the avoidance that are done by the main kohen who's doing most of the avoidance of the mincha. The lifting of the keli had to be done by another kohen because the kohen doing the kmitza could not lift the keli while he's being busy with kmitza. Therefore, this is not mentioned in that Mishnah. The answer of Sheshes, whether Kmitza may be done from a keli that's on the ground. Sheshes said, let's examine how they did the avoid in the Beis HaMikdash. The Mishnah regarding the Lechem Aponim enumerates that the changing of the Lechem Aponim needed four Kehanim to remove the Lechem Aponim and the spoons of the Levoina from the Shulchan, and the four Kehanim to bring in the new Lechem Aponim and the new spoons of the Levoina. The Mishnah doesn't list the need for a Kohen to come and lift the Shulchan while the Levoina is being removed, which is really considered to be the Kmitza, which shows the clarity that Kmitza can be done even when the keli is on the ground. Why don't we say like Avimi just said, that maybe the Mishnah is only listing the main avoidus, not the kohen who are needed to assist. And for tomorrow, you can't say that, because in the previous Mishnah, the Mishnah does not give the number of kohanim needed, so that's a good answer. This Mishnah tells us the number of kohanim that are needed. Therefore, if a kohen would be needed to lift a shulchan, it would have listed it. The fact that it does not proves that a kmitza may be done from a keli that's on the ground, shma minho. Rava said, it's obvious to me that a kmitza may be done from a keli that's on the ground. As you can see from the removal of the spoons of the levoina from the shulchan, it's also obvious that one can make a mincha kodesh by putting it into a keli that's on the ground, as can be seen from the putting of the spoons of the levoina onto the shulchan. Rava asked, what about making the kaimitz kodesh by putting it into a keli on the ground after the kmitza was done? Do we learn this from the mincha itself, which can become kodesh in a keli on the ground, or do we learn it from the blood of an animal carbon whose kabbalah must be in a keli that is held by the kohen? Rava then answered that we learn it from the blood of a carbon, and the keli must therefore be held by a kohen. Rava said, if a kaimitz was split and put into two kalim, it's kaddosh. Now, if he learns the kaimitz from the blood of an animal, it should not become kaddosh in two kalim, just as is true for blood. And for tomorrow, Rava reversed his view here and agreed that the kmitza would not become kaddosh if it was split into two kalim. How do we know that blood does not become kaddosh when split into two kelim. After the Gemara, we see this in a brayse regarding chatas waters, in which Rav Tachlifa ben Shol said, if the kohen was mekadosh less than the amount needed in one keli and a similar amount in another keli, they do not become kadosh. They then asked, does this concept apply to blood of a carbon as well? Do we say that regarding chatas water, it's a halacha mash mesina, and therefore we can't learn from over there to a case of blood? Or do we say that we learn it from the pasuk of v'tovah b'mayim, and since by blood it also says v'tovah b'adam, we can learn the same concept for blood as well? As we can then, Rav Lazar said that even in the case of blood, it would not become kadosh. Rava brings a brisa, which explicitly says this as well, that the entire amount, required amount of blood has to be received in one keli. This brisa also says that the pasuk of Min Hadam teaches that blood applications on the inside Mizbech must be done with the blood that is discussed in that parasha. Rav explains, this comes to exclude the using of leftover blood on the kohen's finger that was still there from the previous application. This supports Rav Elazar, who says that the blood from the one sprinkling that's left on the finger of the kohen cannot be used for the next sprinkling. Rather, he has to again dip his finger into the blood for each sprinkling. Rav and Bravada asked Rava, your Talmud said in the name of Ramam that a brisa says that if the blood from the kohen's finger went onto a garment, the halacha is as follows. If he had not yet sprinkled, the garment requires washing. If he had already sprinkled, it does not require washing. Presumably this means that if he had not yet finished all the required sprinkling, I mean all seven, it would require washing. This shows that the blood left on the finger is kosher for all of the sprinklings. And for the Gemara, the brisa means that if a sprinkling was not yet done after he dipped his finger into the blood, the garment requires washing. However, if he already did one sprinkling since that dipping, it would not require washing, even if he still has to do more sprinklings. This is because each sprinkling requires him to again dip his finger into the blood in the keli. Abaye, as the Mishnah says, that after the kohen finishes the sprinkling of the blood of the parah aduma, he wipes off the blood from his hand onto the body of the cow. This suggests that it's only done after all of the sprinklings, not after each sprinkling, which shows that the blood left on this finger from the sprinkling could be used for the next as well. Rava answered, the Mishnah means that after all the sprinkling, he wipes his entire hand, but in between each sprinkling, he only has to wipe his finger, not his entire hand. But in fact, if he wipes his finger between the sprinklings on the cow, his finger's getting all dirty, it's not going to be fit to do the avodah. Abaye said he wipes it on the edge of the bowl. In fact, did Rav Elazar really say that the blood does not become kadosh if the minimum amount is not taken in one keli? We find that he says that the chavite mincha of the kohen gadol may be kadosh in halves. Maybe he can make it kadosh in halves since it's offered in halves. Now, if he holds regarding blood that it may not be split, he should also learn the mincha from the blood and say that it also may not be done like that. You can say that he doesn't learn one carbon from another because we find that he learns an aspect of kemitza from the removal of the levina from on top of the shulchan. And for the Gemara, he learns one type of mincha from another, but he doesn't learn a mincha from the blood of an animal carbon.